Hello and welcome to TellerNetcast.com, your local internet radio with news, talk, and culture. You're listening to the Food Integrity Now show. I'm Carol Gravet. I'm one of the hosts of the show, and I'm here today with my two co-hosts, Susan Wright and Matt Spaeth. Welcome.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
It's great to have you here today. We have, as a very special guest today, Tana Blackmore. Tana is the director and founder of Sacred Grounds, and we're really Sacred Grounds International, isn't it, Tana?
Yes.
Okay. We're excited to have you here today. Welcome.
Thank you. It's such an honor, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, we spoke with Tana a few days ago, and she just has such an amazing story of what she's creating in Montana. We're just really excited to have you here and to share your amazing journey and what you're doing up there in Montana with our listeners. So let's get started. Tell us a little bit about Sacred Grounds International and Happy Heart Ranch.
Well, Sacred Ground International, it's an organization that I founded actually legally as a nonprofit organization in 99. Actually, it had really started many years before, and since about 1994. And the primary reason for doing Sacred Ground was to create a place where people could come and to find many of the things that I had. It is a place in Montana. It's 3,000 acres. And a lot of the goals were conservation. We had to start with the ranch itself. We wanted it to be a place that actually demonstrated the philosophies that we were talking about, sustainability and integrity and respect and honoring of all life. And so we had to start with Sacred Ground and the ranch itself, which is the Happy Heart Ranch. And I ended up actually inheriting the ranch and coming home after being gone for over 20 years. And so we started with the conservation to bring back the grasslands that had been absolutely devastated and to create a place that spoke to sustainability, that spoke to the integrity and the sacredness of all life and all living things, and to invite people to participate in many, many ways. And we have, it's multifaceted, so we're up to a lot of things. If you could give me just a little direction, since we spoke before, as to where you would like me to go, because I can talk about a lot of things.
Well, you know, one thing I found very interesting, you said when you came back to the ranch after being gone, the ranch was pretty depleted. And maybe you could share with our listeners on how you restored it and what you're doing as far as the sustainability.
When I came back, the 3,000 acres that I'm talking about didn't even look like it did as a child growing up here. It was down to the dirt. It had been absolutely devastated. This is very lush mountain country. And it was heartbreaking to see. And I had come home after 20-some years. I had been a successful designer in New York and Colorado, and I had built a multimillion-dollar business that had literally gone out of business overnight due to some junk bond issues that had occurred in the industry, and it took thousands of us out of business. And I came home, as I am part Native, to do a rather traditional activity called Cry on My Mountain. And I came home to pray at the place of my childhood where I felt safe and secure, and to pray at the foot of the mountain. And I had no intentions of staying. This is in the middle of the Crow Indian Reservation, and because I am a woman, and because I am Lakota rather than Crow, there were just many, many reasons why it really would not be advantageous to stay. And during my time and my many, many walks on the mountain, and I spent months praying and walking, and one day I had my epiphany, my light bulb went off, and I was given back my life. with some incredible inspiration, some incredible insights into the meaning of life and the sacredness of all life, and most of all, the sacredness of my life. And in the Native traditional way, we have a giveaway. And so I went to the mountain, and I asked the mountain, what may I do to give back and to say thank you for all that this mountain has given to me? And what I heard in the clearest of voice was to create a place where others can come and they can find what you found. And it took many months and a lot of discussion with my mother and to really think of what we could do, because it literally was devastated. Over the years since my father had been gone, 20-some years, my mother had moved to town and leased the ranch out. And unfortunately, when you lease land, the people who lease quite often don't think of the generations to come or the next year or the year after that. They don't have the stake in the ownership. And as a consequence, they had brought in far too many cattle, overgrazed, devastated many of the springs. And so I set about learning about how to restore the ranch and how to bring it back to its natural state. My mother had asked me, what would we do with this if we took it back? Because she had literally tried to sell it, and she got it back again. And rather than to go through the trying to sell it again, she said, well, what would we do with it if we kept it? And so I said, well, let's create a wonderful place for people to come. Let's create a role model of sustainability. And so in my studies, I had learned about buffalo. I had taken grazing management, land management courses, just a few, just enough to wet my feet. And lo and behold, very early on, I had, in order to sustain us, because the ranch was there, there was nothing here. My mother was broke. I was broke. We didn't have any money between us to really start any great endeavor. And so I started doing some business consulting on the side. And when I was on a business trip, there was a break, and they took us to a little store. And in this store, there was a mounted buffalo head. And I will never forget this. I walked up to the buffalo, and I was thinking in my usual rather cynical way, oh, how sad that this buffalo needs to be, an animal has to die so that it can be mounted up here. And all of a sudden, I heard this buffalo talking to me, and I saw these pictures in my mind of these baby buffalo. And I heard this voice that says, it just kept saying, bring back the buffalo, bring back the buffalo. And I said, oh, no, 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 please don't ask this of me. I know nothing of buffalo. Well, I had shared this with a dear friend, and 30 days later, which was Christmas, I was gifted 3 baby buffalo. It was a huge surprise to me and a huge shock. Well, that began the buffalo. And from there, more people gifted more babies and yearlings and two-year-olds, and we started out with a core herd of about 10, 12 animals. And what I did know was that buffalo, their hoof action, buffalo are native to the landscape and the prairies of America, whereas cattle are Asian. And the reason that the prairies used to be so lush and the grass used to be so tall, and they used to say you could see the grass waves, you know, like ocean waves, waves on the ocean. Well, if you go through the prairies now, you certainly don't see anything like that. And what I learned about buffalo is that by the very nature of buffalo's existence, they create and restore and stimulate life on the prairie. It's their hoof action, and the fact that they're constantly on the move. They fertilize, they stimulate, and they aerate the soil, which stimulates the growth, and it revitalizes and recreates the natural habitat for the natural grasses. All things were created here in an ecosystem that when the original ecosystem begins to be restored, then the natural native grasses rather than the old invasive grasses start to come back. And as a consequence of taking out buffalo, and again, they do roam. You don't keep them in real tiny pastures. And as they roamed, we noticed the impact that they were having. Well, today, many years later, we now have in excess of 180, we generally have between 180 and 200 head. And as we rotate that herd through our pastures, we now have grass that is up to our waist. We have, the springs are coming back. Whereas cattle will tromp down a spring, buffalo actually stimulate water to come to the surface. And with that, with higher grasses than income, your grass birds, your grass, it just, here comes the ecosystem back, and you'll see turtles back in the ponds, you'll see the beaver return, and this is what we're seeing here. So it has been a transition through using buffalo that we have begun to restore and bring back the paradise that once was here.
That's beautiful. Tana, can you tell us what sort of programs and opportunities do you have for someone that's more interested in learning more about the buffalo and partaking in some of the activities that you do in your day-to-day life?
Well, what we've done, go ahead. What we have done in the past is I would have workshops in the summertime, and we actually had a camp for a while, but all that being very labor intensive and not very cost effective. This year, we did close down for what I'm calling renovation and revaluation, because we really do want to make it available to the public in a manner that is sustainable to us, and where we are dependent upon donations. With the economy, our donations started to fall off. And so what we're really doing now is we're on a big push to raise money to actually create a greater infrastructure, to create buildings where people can actually stay. In the summertime, we do welcome volunteers, and if people will contact us, we welcome people to come out, to come and go out, and we take them out to show them the buffalo herd. We show them the, we take them up to an area where we have, we also are host for the International Sundance that is traveling the globe, and it comes here every other year. And we take them across the terrain of the mountain. We allow them to walk here and to photograph, and we invite people to come who want to come and retreat. But again, now at present time, we have only tents and such to offer. So it's a summertime kind of activity. For this summer, we don't have any set programs until May. We really have to evaluate what we can do while we're fundraising and attempting to create some greater, more stable infrastructure for people to come year-round. The goal is a year-round facility with a learning center and a simple log lodge where people can come and they can study the habitat, they can come and retreat, they can come and just be here and observe. It's a very sacred mountain. The natives here have held this mountain in high esteem for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's a very mystical place. And so it's a very special place to visit and for us to then share our programs around the native plants, the medicinals that we make. We do all of our own organic growing, and we do teach them more about the buffalo and the programs that we facilitate around our buffalo. Because our buffalo, we hold them as a buffalo preserve rather than a buffalo ranch where we are based, where we would be based on the commercial meat industry. That's never our intention. Our buffalo have never been in a corral. They've never been through a sorting system. They are completely free range and roaming. But because we have to go through a culling process for the health of the herd and to keep the size down so that we don't overgraze, we have created more programs where people are actually getting more involved. And this rather addresses the issue that we're addressing today, which is food integrity. And I have to tell you, it's kind of an interesting story, because we were culling in the field. I would bring in special sharpshooters to make certain that everything went very clean and very without any chaos for the herd. And our harvests were, and I call them harvests because I chose words that were softer for me, because it was a very, very traumatic thing to have to do with my family. And they are my family. I've raised every single one of them, and I know them well, and they know me. So in our harvest process, I then went to what I call the sacred hunt process. It is the native process, the native way of doing a harvest. And we literally go to the herd the day before, and we notify them that we will come the following day. And we ask that the animal or the animals please set themselves aside, knowing our intention of what we need to do, that it be their choice, that they be honored and be given the opportunity to complete their cycle and at the same time do so for the benefit of the herd, and also that we not just be coming out and doing a selection for them. And then we do a ceremony, it's a pipe ceremony, and the following morning we would get up and we would do smudging and prayers, and it's a rather ornate ceremony, and then we would send the trucks out, and the harvest would be made, and in the field, prayers and tobacco, and we would allow the buffalo to come in to say goodbye. And when we do it in this way, it's so interesting because the buffalo know it's going to happen, so they're not in chaos, they're not running, they're not frightened. In fact, when the animal relaxes to the ground, the family of that buffalo literally comes in to say goodbye. And we give them a few minutes to do so, and then we bring our vehicles in around the animal, and we dress the animal and put down tobacco and say our prayers. And then the animal, at that time and over the years, because we weren't doing very many, I would donate the animals and the meat to different sun dances and to elders, and we would gift the robes and the skulls to spiritual leaders for their ceremonies. Because buffalo is something that, though it means so much to the Native Americans, it's something that's very difficult for them to have a sacred skull means everything. To have a robe is almost unbelievable because they are so expensive and they're rare and hard to come by. So the Native people have been so grateful. And then the numbers of my herd, they grew very, very quickly, so I knew I had to call more. And this story is a very humbling story. My foreman and our taxidermist came to me and they said, Tana, you're going to have to do something more. Now the numbers are to where you are going to have to harvest like 30 to 50 animals a year, and you can't just keep giving this away. We're talking about sustainability here. And they hounded me and they said, you've got to open this up to hunts. Well, that was just absolutely not even conceivable to me. My whole concept of hunts and hunters and hunters coming out there with their rifles and shooting into my herd, and it was not an option. And I looked at all the alternatives, and I found that not an option either, having to bring my herd in and cull them and run them through a system and trailer them up and take them to feedlots or to slaughter plants. It was heartbreaking, and I was in agony. And finally one day when they asked me one more time, and very cynically I turned to them, and in a very angry tone, I said, fine. If you can find hunters that want to come here and go through the whole Native process, the honoring harvest, the sacred hunt, if you're willing to do that, if they're willing to do that, and they only get one shot, and then I have a backup. And I gave a pretty stiff protocol to the whole process. I said, if you can find hunters that are willing to do that, then I will do that. And actually, that was last November. And just to make a long story short, they came back very quickly and said there are many, many hunters who would like to do this. And as a consequence, we have had many hunts over this winter now, and because it is in the wintertime when we harvest, and they've humbled me. They come back off the mountain, and they hold my hands, they hug me, they've got tears in their eyes, and they tell me what a magnificent, amazing, amazing, honoring experience it is for them. And they have tears in their eyes, and they tell their friends, and their friends come, and suddenly word has gotten out. And for me, it is the answer to such deep, deep prayers. For me, it's been humbling, and I've had to apologize to the industry of hunting because they do care. They really do care, and they love this process, and my buffalo are honored. So I've kind of been going on here for a little while, but I hope that was more of what you wanted to know.
Yeah, it was perfect. And how many times do you do this sacred hunt a year? I mean,
well, this year we have done 30, and next year we anticipate we will probably do in the vicinity of about 50. And that's a large number. So we are committed pretty much November through February. We will end our season this coming weekend.
How big? So I understand your herd's about 200 head, and at one point in time there was just an incredible amount of buffalo on the North American plains. How big do you see your herd getting at one point?
Pardon?
Oh, please continue.
We have 3,000 acres, and as I'm able to raise money and actually fence that property, then we can expand that area into buffalo grazing land. We only have not quite two-thirds of the ranch is even fenced in buffalo. So I anticipate that as we can build a buffalo fence, it's very, very expensive. It's we now have pretty close to $200,000 worth of just fencing in the ranch itself. As we can expand that, we can do a few more buffalo, but not so many more. I don't really want to grow much bigger than 200 because the herd starts to split up into more families, and I'd rather keep them in one group, because where one goes, they will all go now, and if you have many more than that. When there were millions of buffalo, literally, that used to cross these hills, there are old buffalo, horned calves, and so forth that we would see. But that was the inspiration that I had, was the memory of some of the elder women here who told me the stories that their grandmother would tell them before the Wachichu came, when they would literally watch them pass for days. It would take a herd of buffalo days to pass through this country. That was just inconceivable to me. But so we will probably, try and keep our herd fairly small, and the number will probably be between 30 and 50 per year, and we are already booking for next fall and the year after that.
Mm-hmm. Will you describe a little bit more about your relationship with the buffalo? For example, what you were talking about, how you get them to move to different parts of the pasture.
Mm. Well, when we started out with the buffalo, we just had a handful, and we had them very close to the house, and I was like a mother hen, and I was terrified of them. I'd heard all the stories, they're dangerous. Well, our herd was very young, but nonetheless, and yet I love animals, and in order to care for them, and we were feeding them hay, and so we were with them all the time, and we would take vegetables out of the garden, and we would go down in a pickup, and we would feed them vegetables and just sit with them for the longest time. And as a consequence, we got to know them so intimately and watch them. And, how were we going to move them, when we got another pasture fence? How were we going to get them between one pasture and the next? We had no idea how we were going to make buffalo move, because buffalo go where buffalo want to go, and that's it. You don't convince them of anything. So we began very early on, because I'd talk to them all the time, and I would go out and I would pray and sit on the hill with them and just thank the Creator for them and thank them for being here and all the blessings they were bringing. And as a consequence, that dialogue just kind of took up. And as it turned out, we ended up talking to the buffalo, and to find out that the buffalo would respond. And when we would open a gate and we would need them to go into the next pasture, I found that if I would send them pictures of them going to the gate, and I would just ask them, I would talk through my mind's eye and just send them messages, please move into the other pasture so this one can rest. And we started this process of being able to communicate with them telepathically. And it was proven time and time again for us that worked. Well, because I'm native and because I walk, somewhat of the native path, and I live on the res, well, that's rather acceptable for here. But out in the bigger world, when I joined the National Bison Association, I would go to the national conferences to learn more about buffalo and raising buffalo. I couldn't really talk about those kinds of things because these big old ranchers, looking at me, a woman, and so forth, and my small little herd, and they had these big herds, and they would just smile at me, yeah, sweetheart, uh-huh. And one year they brought in a speaker. He was a famous, and I, to this day, I cannot remember his name, and I have called them and asked them what his name was. But he was a famous animal handler. He was responsible for many of the famous handling facilities for large wild reserves and so forth. And he came and he demonstrated over a course of 2 days all the different kinds of handling facilities that could be implemented and all the different ways you can run them around on four-wheelers. Some people can actually use horses and some people use vehicles. And here up to this point, we'd only done, you know, at this point we had started moving them on foot. They would go to places and they would break out of their pastures and I would end up having to go and get them and there was no way we could drive there. So I would go there and I'd get behind them and say, come on, we got to go home, we got to go home. And they'd go and I'd walk them home. I ended up walking hundreds of miles with my buffalo because they got out often before we got our fences up. And again, this just renewed this relationship with them. And at the end of the conference, this man stood up and he said, you know, you can have all these facilities, you can spend millions of dollars on whatever method you want, but I'm going to tell you that the buffalo, you know, still carries its ancient DNA, much like the shark, the dolphin. It still has its ability to understand and to work in a collaborative way. And he said the number one best way to work with buffalo is telepathically. They hear you, and they will respond. If you collaborate and cooperate and honor them, they will do the same to you. And I nearly cried. I couldn't believe it. You know, he had just said the very thing that I didn't dare to say, and he said it publicly, and he said it to many, many, many ranchers from all over the nation.
I'm curious, Tana, how did the other ranchers respond to that?
At the time, I would have to say, I don't think they heard him.
Interesting.
I don't think they heard him. I was very happy. And what has happened as an evolution since, because I've now gone back and to these conferences, and what has now happened is many of the things that we're doing are starting to get recognition. And now when I tell my stories, there are more of them that listen and now more of them that actually come and talk to me. And when I talk, it started out as kind of sweet stories because I'm Native. And somehow when a Native tells a story about prayer or working with buffalo or animals, then it seems to be, well, yeah, that's okay. But not when it comes to, let's say, the regular, you know, white man, let's say, the white man, white woman working with animals, it doesn't seem to be, you know, as quite as acceptable. If they do it, then it's they kind of have to really stay quiet about it. And what I have found now is that it has become much more acceptable because the buffalo growers in America, I think, are in the business because they love the buffalo. But what they have done is they have followed industry standard and industry guidance, and the only industry that was guiding them was the cattle industry. And I think now, and I went to the conference in January, and many of them came and talked to me because many of them now know that my stories have been corroborated and collaborated and they're true. And they come to me and very quietly step aside with me and they say, I love my buffalo. I hate this system. I hate the way I have to do things. I hate that I have to take my buffalo to feed lots where they're probably going to get sick, where they're going to have to be injected with all these chemicals to keep them alive until they take them into the slaughterhouses. They hate the process, and they love their buffalo. And they say, what are we going to do? So I do believe there is a grassroots movement of consciousness to want a change. I don't know that all of our laws and USDA have afforded to make that all that easy, but many of them have taken the industry by the horns, let's say, and they have started their own movement around grass-fed. Now, this isn't monitored, so unfortunately, a lot of things can be put on a label that aren't necessarily, that don't imply the truth of what's really going on. But there is, among the buffalo growers themselves, this desire to change that it be grass-fed, that they go directly sometimes from the pasture directly to the slaughter plant so that the animals are immediately harvested, so that they're not in a holding pattern, which is very, very dangerous for the quality of the meat of the animals. because they don't have an immune system to be put into feedlots, and they do get sick, and they do have to be treated to not get sick. And, of course, that's just more going into the meat. So there is a movement. There is a heartfelt desire to change the industry. And I don't know of anyone who really is taking the liberty, as I am, of doing the field harvest and doing it the way that I am. There are those ranchers out there that have many more animals and can't do exactly what I'm doing, or haven't set up to do so. And what they were doing is they were just doing regular hunting, just going out and just shoot them. And the way that we do it is so much more appealing, and I don't know that they feel that they really have the right to do that. Because I'm Native, I have the right to do that. I would encourage anyone. You don't have to use tobacco. You don't have to do it any particular way. You can say a Christian prayer. You can say whatever kinds of gratitude prayers. It is just simply the conversation with the buffalo and the honoring. And at the point of the harvest, say your gratitude prayers and thank the buffalo and look at the herd and look at them in the eye and say, thank you. And I could go on here, but I better take a break and let you ask me another question.
We're at 31 minutes.
Okay.
Tana, maybe, so the buffalo industry has expanded a lot in the past 10 years, and from before we could never buy buffalo in the supermarket, and now we can buy it in pretty much any market we go into, and it definitely has the marketing that it is more healthy. But I understand that a lot of these buffalo are raised and processed in the same way that cattle are. Can you talk about how the difference between a natural gift from the buffalo, such as such as that comes from your herd, and that which people can find in the stores?
Well, I'm going to address this gingerly, in that I want to make certain that all of my facts are correct, but I will tell you what I do know for certain. And that is that much of the labeling that goes on buffalo today says all natural. And I can tell you that the all natural label by USDA standards means nothing more than the fact that you are eating buffalo and not beef or pork or something else. All natural means nothing more than you are eating buffalo. Now, beyond that, it may say no antibiotics. It may say no steroids. Steroids are not usual in the buffalo industry anyway. Antibiotics, I question, because in the large herds, quite often, they have to take their animals into a feedlot situation just like cattle. And unfortunately for a buffalo, they do not have an immune system for being held in close quarters and to stay in their own mess. They're very, very prone to disease. They're very, very prone to parasites, which is the number one killer of a buffalo. And in order to sustain buffalo in feedlots for any period of time, they have to give them something. And exactly what is in there, whether it has been said that, well, it dissipates out of the meat, or it's not really considered a chemical or harmful, again, I can't address those substances other than they have to use them in order to sustain them there. And I do know that whatever by industry standard is given as an okay may not be on the label. So you may not really be hearing what the animal is ingesting or what the animal is going through prior to. Now, if it does say grass-fed, you are more likely to be getting an animal that is going directly from grass, perhaps even being harvested in the field, but more importantly, going directly from grass to the slaughter plant. That would be the most effective and, again, one of the purest ways. Those animals probably have been injected as young calves. They have had their full row of what they call three-way, five-way, seven-way, nine-way, whatever it may be, all their antibiotics and all of their brucellosis shots and so forth. And perhaps, and I don't know this, and I will say this, perhaps they don't mention that because they feel that that then dissipates out of the body long before the animal is harvested. But for animals that are free range, that have never, ever had shots, one has to do some hunting around. And quite often what people do is they will find ranchers, and they'll approach them, and several people will go together, and they will say, we would like the buffalo meat, and we'd like to go ahead and purchase an animal. Now, for myself, because I don't go through a USDA-approved system, that's fine, because the buffalo are considered a wild animal. So people often come, and they will purchase an animal, and then we harvest it for them, and we will process it for them, and so then they have the meat. And so people can do that. But I would say look for grass-fed. All natural doesn't mean a thing.
What is the health benefit of a grass-fed animal versus, say, a corn-fed animal, Tana?
Well, what is really a buzz in the buffalo industry itself right now is the talk about grass-fed means that you can't feed them anything other than what a buffalo would naturally eat. A buffalo would not naturally eat corn. It would not eat scraps. It would not eat waste. It would not eat the things that are often fed, you know, throughout the industry to feed, you know, what is being fed to beef, let's say. You have to keep them on natural grasses. If you're feeding them grain, buffalo wouldn't ordinarily be eating grain. You can't even feed them grain. So grass-fed, if you're truly eating grass-fed buffalo, they have been on nothing but grass. The other nice thing about that is by that, the meat, and what we find is our buffalo each year, each generation is getting larger and fatter because our native grasses are coming back. When you feed a buffalo what is natural to a buffalo, then their meat, their whole composition is a much healthier, stronger, more tender, more natural, more wonderful, and it doesn't have gamey flavor and doesn't taste like corn and it doesn't have a lot of the other flavors. It's much more flavorful. And also, the animal is raised in a much more peaceful environment. We're firm believers that if an animal goes through fear and chaos and crisis prior to its being harvested, then all of that goes through the meat. The body naturally releases endorphins through the body that definitely changes the flavor and the quality of the meat. So the more peaceful the animal is, the more of the animal's life where it's been happy and eating natural foods. So grass-fed within the industry, that is the goal.
Are very many of the buffalo ranchers that you know, do very many do the grain-fed or the corn-fed? I mean, how widespread is that?
That's predominant.
Wow.
It's actually predominant. Those who actually can have the acreage to run buffalo are not that many. So they're in smaller pastures, which are being subsidized by chemically treated hay, and just straight hay. You know, that was another issue. They were saying, well, if we're going to do grass-fed, then if you're going to feed hay to subsidize, then it's got to be grass hay, and it can't be chemically treated. Well, where are you going to buy non-chemically treated hay? Here at Sacred Ground, we go out and we literally hay our grasslands so that we're literally using the very grass that they would ordinarily be eating. So we're unique in that we stepped out and we did it that way. These large ranchers that are doing it for commercially, I mean, that is how they're making their living. They're not being subsidized by donations and other projects. But again, I do believe that we can do it better. Throughout the industry, they're being fed, buffalo are being fed all kinds of things, much like cattle. They're being treated like cattle. And I don't mind stepping out and saying that. I really do want to promote the industry because buffalo, truly, we know that the enzymes in buffalo meat actually complement the enzymatic system of the human being. And I've always felt that the buffalo was put here to feed the people, body, mind, and spirit, but here was an animal that came specifically to feed, you know, the people. And as a result, the creator or just genetically or evolutionarily, this animal is designed, it complements the human system, whereas actually beef and other meats do not.
Wow, I don't think many people know that. I'm interested, why do so many ranchers use the cattle system? Is it because they don't have enough land? Is it, like, what are the reason behind their decision?
Much of it comes from the buffalo industry really started to come back alive in the United States in the 80s. And they had no other role model. There was nothing else out there. Nobody was talking about it. And they had no other system, no other guidance but to go to, well, how does this affect a cow? Well, then we'll try that on a buffalo. There was no standard. There was no one had gone before. So this was really uncharted territory. And then suddenly when it took off, and I mean the buffalo industry took off, it ran for a few years, and people it was all breeder stock. And they were having trophy shows and the biggest, baddest buffalo you could raise and you could breed, and they started breeding them to look more like beef and to have bigger hindquarters and to offer more meat. But the industry was kept alive and thriving on the breeder stock. And they all knew that breeder stock, you know, people were spending $30,000, $40,000 on one animal, and to buy a pregnant cow, you know, was $3,500 to $4,000. And, I mean, it was just outrageous, the cost of what buffalo were. And this is when I got into it, when people were donating me their babies. And I just thought, whoa, holy macaroni. And people were thriving, and the industry grew, and very wealthy people started the big old buffalo ranches all on breeder stock. And then the bottom falls out of breeder stock because they only need so much breeder stock. And then after that, it gets into, what are you going to do with all these buffalo that you've got now? And thus, they really, really turned the attention around, and the market really fell off horribly. And they knew they had to turn their attention around to educating the American people to the value of eating buffalo. And that has been the campaign for the last 10 years, and it definitely is taking ground. But I think it's because it's the way Grandpa did it. There was no other way to do it. Nobody was showing a different way of doing it. They followed suit, and within the cattle industry, you raise your calves, you take them to fall in the market, you drop them off at the local feedlot, and you walk away with your check, and you're done. And they started doing the same thing with buffalo. They started dropping them off at buffalo co-ops, they were called, and walking away with their check. And that was nice. But in the buffalo industry, anything this new, and for me, the buffalo, and not to say that the beef isn't, I mean, every animal in our industry that is being raised for food in America is being treated without the respect, without the honoring, that its life, its individual life is sacred. But today I speak to the buffalo because they are what I am about, and I'm using their platform to address, you know, the whole of the industries and the production industries. But I think it was naive. And like I said, the first time I've seen a hint that the buffalo growers themselves are truly unhappy, where they would actually say so, was this January. And there is a rumble. They are unhappy with the industry. They are trying to find another way. They were very excited to learn about the buffalo hunt. I don't think very many of them thought that they could take on the exact protocol, but they wanted to look at what it would take for them to do more hunts, perhaps. And I also started something else, because at the point of harvest in the slaughter plants, they're throwing the buffalo away. They're throwing all the buffalo away except for the meat itself. And when I learned that, I didn't realize how rampant it was. Across America, by the landfills are full of buffalo. And it just reminds me of the old days of throwing away the buffalo. And to me, the buffalo is such a sacred and such an important animal, especially at this time, you know, for our food industry, et cetera. But they're such a sacred animal, and to see them thrown away. So I didn't know how to get the attention. I knew if I crawled on a soapbox and talked about it, nobody would listen to me again. So I started another company. It's called Native Vogue, and nativevogue.com. You can go And I took the buffalo horns. I now go and I collect the buffalo horns that would be thrown away. And I make very beautiful high-end buffalo horn and sterling silver jewelry. And I'm now talking to more about what can be done with the buffalo horns. We've done the same at the, we go to the, there are a couple of men who have really taken this on for the industry's sake now. They go out and 20 below at the slaughter plants, at the point of slaughtering, and as the hides come out, they're actually shearing them and they're getting that winter wool. And then they ship it to me, and I'm making yarn, and I'm weaving beautiful, beautiful blankets, and we'll go on to make more other and more and other things. The whole purpose behind this was to have a platform to stand on to say, see what we can be doing here with the byproducts of the buffalo. Let's stop throwing the buffalo away. You use the wool of the sheep. Let's use the wool of the buffalo. Let's use the hides of the buffalo. It's still very expensive because nobody's doing that much tanning. There's no place to send the byproducts. Nobody's doing anything with them. So the ranchers are all taking a look at each other and going, well, I say, well, we're going to have to start the industry ourselves. Let's, again, encourage more people to get into the uses of these raw materials so we have a place to send these raw materials so that the buffalo can continue to be honored. And I'm a strong believer that the spirit of the buffalo lives on through every part of the buffalo. And if you have a piece of buffalo jewelry, or if you have buffalo wool, or if you have something made from buffalo, or if you're ingesting the spirit of the buffalo, you're taking on the attributes of that animal. And I can't think of a finer animal role model for our country than the buffalo right now, to be ingested, to be worn, to be draped in your home, etc.
Wow, that's beautiful, Tana. Would you mind giving our listeners your website so that people know how they can find out more about Sacred Grounds International and, again, giving the Native Vogue website?
It's Sacred Ground, singular, Sacred Ground International. It's sacredgroundintl.org, O-R-G. And we can be called at area code 406-245-6070. And Native Vogue is just as it sounds, NativeVogue.com is the website for Native Vogue, where you can come and learn more about the products. And again, I can be contacted at the same number if you're interested in doing something with buffalo byproducts, if you'd like to jump on the bandwagon and let's create an end demand. Let's create a demand for these byproducts so that they can be used.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, it's been wonderful having you on the show today, and I think you've really shared some wonderful information for our listeners, and our listeners know how they can find out more about what you're doing and the Sacred Hunt on your website or contacting you. So Matt or Susan, do you have anything else?
I have one thing. I just wanted, you've given us a lot of good information, and a while back I had ordered some buffalo from a rancher, and I called them to make sure, just to ask about how they raise the buffalo. What can you tell people that are looking to buy buffalo if they call a rancher, they find someone online? What are the questions that you would ask?
I would ask if the animals, where they're being raised, are they out on grass? Are they being hay-fed, grain-fed? Are they being contained in a smaller area? Ask about the actual harvest process. Ask if they're being field harvested, or if they're being taken to a slaughter plant. Not that that is wrong, or that may be the only alternative that rancher may have. But ask about the process that the animal goes through. And then, of course, ask if the animal is receiving any antibiotics, or if it's being, any vaccinations that it's had. Just ask very, very up front what shots the animal has had and when the animal had them.
Okay.
Tana, do you have any information for, say, one of our listeners who would be interested in purchasing a buffalo, who may not know what to do with the whole buffalo. Do you have any guidance for them on?
Well, at this point, because the not knowing where that individual lives, if there's a robe, and that's always a wonderful question to ask. You know, if you're buying an entire animal, ask the rancher what's going to become of the robe and the skull, or the other byproducts, if indeed all you're doing is picking up the meat. And you can please feel welcome to contact myself, because I can't give you outlets per se as to who to call, as to what to do with the robe. At the point of harvest, the robe very, very shortly thereafter has got to be cleaned and salted, and then it can be preserved for a very long time, and it can later be tanned and so forth, which is what we do with most of our robes. And then we sell or we gift our robes to spiritual leaders. But that robe and that skull have, and the rancher should know where those skulls or where those robes could go or where they could be taken to be processed. And please feel free to call and ask. Myself, I may know of a place. But when you're dealing with onesies like that, onesies or twosies, sometimes it's a little bit more work for people to actually get the robes and skulls to a place where they can. But I would help them. I would help them in every way that I could.
Well, Tana, again, thank you very much. It's just been wonderful having you on the show, and I look forward to learning more about what you're creating at Sacred Ground International. So thank.
I want to thank you. This has been a tremendous honor and opportunity, and this means so much to us. And I do believe it's so important for the people, and for the buffalo, and for the animals. You know, throughout the entire agricultural raising of animals for food ingestion. I thank you very, very much for this opportunity with all my heart.
Well, you're more than welcome. Thank you.
It's an honor for us.
Well, listeners, thank you for listening today. You are listening to Food Integrity Now on tellernetcast.com, your local internet radio with news, talk, and culture.